Welcome to the second episode of the Nutrition Education and Racial Disparities in Health podcast from Holistic Matters. This month, our episode features three guests from the Cabarrus Health Alliance in Kannapolis, North Carolina. We're grateful to have Alicia McDaniel, Rolanda Patrick Forehand, and Casey Brown with us to talk about nutrition and health education at the community level, specifically their perspective on what works to make sustainable changes in people's lives, the challenges they experience in developing successful programs, and helping people in their community to become champions for their own health.
We're going to go ahead and get started with this episode of the Nutrition Education and Racial Disparities and Health. And today I have three amazing former colleagues of mine from the Cabarrus Health Alliance. We have Alicia, Casey, and Rolanda with us today. Particularly, I know a lot of us operated on grants or have different programs that are extremely important for community benefit. So I want to hear from you guys on, you know, what is it that really helps make those long-lasting sustainable changes within public health and how we can go ahead and think of it from the perspective of nutritional disparities and health disparities, in particular to, you know, applying for different grants or programmings. What is something that you guys are considering from that community's perspective to take into consideration?
Well, I can go first with that one. In regards to the things that need to be taken into consideration when developing a community-based program, you know, what are the barriers that the potential, you know, participants or the target population that you're aiming to work with, what are the potential barriers that could exist and how can your program assist with reducing those? So maybe you have staff that are only available during the day, but your target population would do best with having classes during the evening. And so I would say thinking about the things that are most important to them, how accessible the program is and how relatable the program. The program definitely has to be relatable in order to engage and maintain participants. Those would be my top three: addressing the barriers, making it accessible, and the program. How relatable is the program?
And would you say that's something that typically you guys would ask the community first before even designing the program, or is it kind of a best practices that you would be following for something like that?
It's funny that you say. I would say looking at the relationships that we've been able to develop throughout not only the Cabarrus County realm, but other neighboring counties, we have wonderful buy-in. And so I remember when we've had a Journey to a Healthier Me, and that's a diabetes prevention program, when we had our community conversations, we would specifically ask, you know, what barriers exist to healthier eating and or physical activity, whereas, you know, safe places that exist in your neighborhood. What kind of health programs would you like to see? When would you like for this this program to meet? Where? Where is a comfortable place? And what type of topics or activities would you like to be considered? And so we keep a log of these things. And then when we have grant opportunities that come across CHA's lap, I guess you can say, you know, we're able to take those into consideration, not only into consideration, but talk about innovative ways that we can build upon them.
You've touched on so many things that I like to call as like challenges or red tapes. Because I think that's huge when you're thinking about like a grant program or launching any type of program for that matter, is because it has to be so relatable. And I think for those listening to this podcast episode, it should kind of, we should probably mention that, you know, Cabarrus Health Alliance sits in Cabarrus County, which is also where the Nutrition Innovation Center is on the North Carolina Research Campus. So we have lots of really good nutrition opportunities available, but they might not be something that everybody in the community can relate to or actually, you know, buy into, like you mentioned. Are there other challenges or other gaps that you kind of see that you're looking to fulfill when you're thinking about community programming or planning?
I think just finding that balance between evidence-based and practice-based programs. So it may have worked somewhere in Chicago, but that doesn't mean it's going to work in Kannapolis. But we try really hard to collaborate with our stakeholders to figure out where is that happy medium. And one of the best things that I enjoy working here at the Cabarrus Health Alliance is that we are open to innovation. And so because we're open to that alternative to programming, we're able to find that happy balance of using what we know works via the evidence, but also being able to adapt, like Rolanda mentioned, to the needs and adapting to the barriers that our particular residents face. So just having conversations, making sure that we are putting people first and then hiring people who already prioritize people in their work. I think that's ever more important that you have people on your staff that know that is our main priority. So we adapt whenever necessary.
Absolutely. I think that's super important.
And also to piggyback off the gaps that you mentioned. So certain grants have very specific criteria to join a program. So specifically our diabetes prevention program funding, the stipulation is that you have to meet a certain BMI requirement, you need to meet a certain A1C requirement, and so you can end up with individuals who are highly interested but who are not eligible based off of, I don't have a BMI within this range, I don't have an A1C within this range. Thankfully, there are other grant programs that have specifically the eligibility is that if you're interested, you can join our program. And so we're able to refer individuals, but there is a gap there where, you know, just trying to find the right fit for each person. And then it can be frustrating for community members if they're like, well, I really want to join, where can I go? And so that's really where it comes to us, like Alicia mentioned and Rolanda mentioned, being adaptable and finding that solution. And really, if there's not a solution that we can immediately see, that we're going to go and research, and even if it's in nearby county, we're going to find somewhere for them to go.
And I think that's, you know, a huge point as well, because those gaps that you're mentioning, you know, they're not just in, you know, a BMI category. It could be, you know, different health conditions. It could, as you mentioned, time of day. All of these things are going to play a role. And, you know, the saying goes, you can't please everybody, but obviously in public health, we're trying our best to do what we can to fill those gaps and, you know, take down those barriers and really give access to care and health information that's, you know, relevant and realistic for everybody. So I think these are all, of course, things that you should be taking into consideration. So how do you take that to the next step? Like, what are those logical steps then that when you take all of these things into account that you put together on a table to create a successful program? How does that magic algorithm, I guess, if you will, all begin to align?
You do a lot of talking, a lot of meeting, a lot of sitting yes. down with people. And the great thing about working in food access or even in nutrition, you're surrounding around a product that everyone at some point of the day has to enjoy, right? So we all eat. And so that's just a way to bring people to the table, no pun intended there, for a meal, for a nice talk. And so I think we try to facilitate opportunities for us to collaborate, to talk with one another. And that's how you really get the inside scoop on people's passions. So I know, for instance, when we had the REACH grant, part of that was just sitting down and knowing, well, Grace Lutheran, them being a faith community in the local area, really does have a congregational passion around food access. So whenever we're talking about any type of grant programming, we make sure we talk to their leadership there to consider, hey, would this work for your community? Is this something you would want to do? Do you have the volunteer base to sustain something like this before we write it into a grant? And so I do think that our process for writing grants and getting approval and making sure we submit letters of support, not just from the people that they ask us to, but going above and beyond and really thinking about who we would need to engage at each level and getting their approval really does help in our success.
That is an amazing point, because truly, like, if you don't have that buy-in and that support from the start, you know, how is it going to dwindle down into the actual application? And that's also important for sustainability measures as well. When the grant is over, what happens? You know, how are we going to go ahead and make sure that this program that you've put a lot of energy and life into stays and does the right, you know, benefit for the community long term? That's a perfect segue too, because you've mentioned faith-based communities, food policy, all of these programmings that you both have mentioned, you know, Journey to a Healthier Me and the REACH grant. I would love for all of you to share kind of some of the best successes that you have had with implementing some type of nutrition or health policy or program into the community. What were some of the highlights, if you would, on, you know, creating better access or giving folks better, you know, diabetes education or nutrition cooking classes, whatever it could be. If you don't mind, I'll giving your favorite. We'll start with you, Casey, if you don't mind.
All right. I would say the success that I have seen over and over again with being a part of the year-long Journey to Healthier Me Diabetes Prevention Program is individuals who would say, I've done the roller coaster dieting so often, and a lot of times they're so hesitant at the beginning of the program of, am I setting myself up for the same disappointment that I had when I went on, for example, the Atkins diet, or I went on the ketogenic diet and then it just didn't work for me long term. I had short term success, but I really want to maintain this, and really seeing that they're able to find what works for them. I think that that's going back to successive programming, really letting them find the solution that works best for them, what's going to work long term, and seeing that they have success after success. And then hearing that years later, after they have graduated the program, that I'm still losing weight, my numbers are great at the doctor, I finally cracked the code, so to speak, is super exciting.
Absolutely. I think that's definitely, it's always rewarding to hear, right? That what you're doing is making a huge difference. And I think, you know, you've mentioned some key terms with like just dieting, this yo-yo back and forth. And those things aren't long-term, you know, they're not sustainable over the long-term. So I think you've really, you know, you get to see that the programming pays off, if you would. Rolanda?
Well, my stories are similar to Casey's in that, you know, I love a challenge. I love when I have a participant that's going to come in the door the first few weeks and tell me what they're not going to do. You know, I mean, I love Sun Drops. I drink several Sun Drops a day. Okay. I love Whataburger. You're not going to get me to stop going to Whataburger. Or fruits and vegetables, I've tried them, but they're absolutely nasty. Water, who wants to drink water? And I'm like, okay, I hear you, but guess what? I'm going to meet you exactly where you are. And after you build that relationship and you're able to give them fun facts about the things that are healthier for them, and you give them the true facts about how many calories and fat are in, you know, fast food items, you know, or the benefits of water, like I mentioned before, or you show them the amount of sugar in canned sodas, not just Sun Drop, but there are so many others that our participants love. And it's that educational piece. It's watching them or observing them go from I can't to that aha moment, you know, and then not only do they become champions for their own health, but it just touches my heart when you hear how they've made household changes. So their participation has impacted their spouse, their children. It's impacted their workplace or even their faith-based institution. You know, macaroni and cheese used to be a familiar side, but now we're, you know, we're using cauliflower instead. Or we used to always have church punch or, you know, sweet tea, but now water, water. Everybody has to go through the line and drink water first. You know, it's the little things that make the largest differences, the most meaningful differences. And so I would say those are some of the successes. And then my most recent class, they thought that they were only going to lose 180 pounds, right? And this was a group of 12. They were very, very committed. And I did have a few, you know, Ms. Rowe, I've done this before and it didn't work. Every week, you know, from time to time I'd hear, I know this, I know this. But then when you get to the end of the year and you see an entire class in which everyone has lost a minimum of 5%. You have one individual that has lost 66 pounds and is no longer, you know, a candidate for weight loss surgery. And then when you're sharing, you know, with them collectively that you all lost close to 100 more than you thought you were going to lose. Or that individual that only exercises 30 minutes a week, but then when you look at their logs, they're logging in over 400 minutes and they just need exercise, you know, and they've incorporated it into their day-to-day life. So those are the successes that mean the most. And that's what motivates us to keep going. You know, being a lifestyle coach, it's not easy. You know, we do have to be patient. We do have to be encouraging. You know, we definitely want to give them factual information and not being afraid to say, you know what, I'm not sure. Let me seek out some additional resources and I'll get back to you. But just understanding our role and being just as excited as they are. I know that was a lot, but that's just
from No, that's perfect. That makes me so excited to hear that, because I think you've hit on so many points that I want to like just call out, because it's important to see that it's one, a trickle down effect, right? So you're helping one person, but that person is by default helping so many other people, whether it's through the church, their family, you know, if they've got children, you're really making a difference on a larger spectrum, whether or not you intend to, because it's just kind of how everybody's building off of each other. And I think, you know, meeting them where they're at is obviously a huge piece, because some people are going to be up against there's not a single vegetable or fruit that I'm ever going to eat. And while, yes, we would love them having 10 servings of fruits and vegetables every day, that's also not realistic. Could not be in the budget. It could not be in the accessibility. There are so many other overlying factors when you're thinking of kind of the hierarchy of needs, if you would. But just when they start to feel better and start to see those changes for themselves, it really just like takes off.
Yes.
So it makes me passionate and happy to hear that it's, you know, it resonates with all of us that are working in this field, because it's something that really is powerful. And I think that's that secret sauce that you guys all keep mentioning. Thank you. All right, Alicia.
Well, I'm like the listeners. I just want to go to Casey and Rolanda's class, because you can tell how amazing they are and how passionate they are about the work. Particularly for me, and I'm sure they would agree too, is the best successes are the ones that you realize you really had a limited amount to do with. So you were there as a support, you were there as a coach, you were there with an encouraging word, but the work itself, they had to put in the work. They had to make that decision. And so it's rewarding for me to see that light bulb come on, for them to find that piece of passion, for them to find whatever catalyst they needed to make the change for themselves. And then whenever we're doing programming, to see how programs build upon themselves. When I first came to CHA, it was a battle of starting with three corner stores, finding three stores that would want to add healthier options to their retail offerings. And by the end of that four-year experience, we had 12 throughout the county, five of which had already been, you know, state recognized as a healthy corner store. And to be able to walk into those stores past 2 years and they're still offering those healthy items. Once again, I didn't make the decision for those healthy items to be present in the store, but I provided an opportunity. And I think that's what I'm most proud of, is just providing opportunities for our communities to be engaged in the wellness and health that they already wanted to do. They just needed that open door and that support. And so that's my favorite part of my job. The funny thing is that in doing those corner stores or even the school gardens, the North Carolina Institute for Plants of Human Health, they have been extraordinary. In providing the expertise on how schools can be engaged in gardening and how that is so valuable to learning beyond just, you know, being outdoors. Like, you being in the outdoor space helps you to be in the air, and you get to measure things, and that's related to not only science and math, you know, the list goes on and on. But once again, something that started in reach but has been sustained through these other partners. And it's helped us. So now we are utilizing sweet potatoes that they grow at local school gardens in our cooking classes. So you get to see everything come full circle. And then things that we've learned through doing the healthy corner stores, we're utilizing with our food pharmacy at the community free clinic. So they have it where they've set up an opportunity for their patients, not just to get access to chronic disease management education, but they also have cooking classes. They provide a food pharmacy on site. So if you come to the physician to see the doctor, you can also go to the food pharmacy at certain times of the day. It's making the healthy choice not only the attractive choice, but the convenient choice. And so a lot of the marketing we utilize in corner stores, that's what we've used to kind of facilitate a welcoming environment for that space. So once again, everything builds upon itself, and it's just about creating an environment that really facilitates wellness and makes it convenient and something that you want to do, not just because you have to do it, but something that you innately want to do because you see how it benefits you long term.
Alicia, or someone else, is there, so you mentioned the Plants for Human Health Institute. Are there other local partners that you work with on any sort of program that helps make them more successful?
Rolanda, Casey, y'all gonna help me, right? But so schools, let's shout out the schools. If anyone had any doubt about how valuable schools were, I don't know how you could, because they are the cornerstone of every single community. But schools are phenomenal. Being able to work with them with our 5210 program, which is a childhood obesity prevention program that promotes eating five fruits and vegetables. The community free clinic has been phenomenal in being able to do outreach with underserved populations. The Farm and Food Council, I reach out to them consistently to ask about what's going on in the world of our producers in the area, what CSAs are going on, how are the farmers markets doing. So we can make like a list of so many people, but I think that just goes back to like the culture of Cabarrus, and really wanting to be a place where we promote the importance of local food and eating healthy, and just trying to be better. We're far from, you know, some type of utopia in regards to nutrition, but we are well on our way, and I know that's one of our hopes in the future.
And also you mentioned churches, right? So not only the schools, but the churches as well. I think, you know, that is, again, about meeting where, you know, meeting the community where they're at and a comfortable place and something that they're, you know, it's a convenient thing. You had so many buzzwords, I felt like, when you were talking about all the different, you know, programmings and different opportunities that you've kind of created within food policies, healthy corner stores. It's one of those things where, you know, this community in Cabarrus County is really lucky to have such a, you know, a robust group of individuals serving the community in all aspects of public health. And so it's something that I think, you know, can be replicated in many areas. It's just a matter of having that group of people to, you know, support it, fulfill it, and follow up with it. So I think, you know, finding those organizations and those places that really are also sharing in the same and equal passion makes a really big difference. So I definitely want all of the amazing work that you guys do each and every day, because it definitely, it's a lot. I can attest to that.
And food pantries too. Cooperative Christian Ministries. Yeah. They are such a great resource. One, they've always stepped up to the plate, but particularly with COVID, we realize how important these food pantries are to ensuring people have access to food. And with CCM, they've made a commitment to offering healthy food. So they're getting fresh fruits and vegetables from a variety of different places. And, you know, farms like Share the Harvest Farm through the YMCA is contributing to efforts like that. So shout out to them for their commitment to nutrition and wellness, and then filling in that gap with access.
All right, so I'm going to ask a challenging question maybe. I don't know. We'll see. I think you guys can rock it. But when you're thinking of kind of what is that one quality or aspect that really promotes long-term sustainable change for a population when it comes to nutrition or health, what would be your overlying factor that would really, you know, promote that long-term sustainable healthy change?
Sincere support. You know, it's one thing when you tell a community or you tell a participant, you know, just join and you're going to get this, you know, but you stick to your promise. You're very flexible. You are creative, and you're not necessarily sold to just one way of educating the group. You know, all of us, we don't learn the same way. We don't retain the same way. And so that goes back to, I'm going to support you enough to do whatever's necessary in order to help you reach success. That also means I'm going to be flexible. I'm going to do my absolute best to be engaging. And then I'm going to make this a safe space for learning. There are going to be some weeks when you hit the mark and you're happy. Then there's going to be some weeks when you didn't eat the fruits and vegetables, you didn't drink the water, you didn't exercise, and the scale is showing it all, but I love you still the same, and tomorrow's a new day, you know? So I would say those are some of the qualities that help a program become sustainable, and they definitely support high retention. You know, just because I didn't do what I was supposed to do, you're not going to kick me out. No, I'm not going to kick you out. But it just means I'm going to push you a little harder this week, you know, so we can make up for where we missed the mark. And definitely using the words we, You know, sometimes people are turned off and we just say, no, we have to do this. I enjoy learning from our participants just as much as, well, I hope just as much as they enjoy learning from us.
And I think that helps with like the compliance and the adherence perspective too. I mean, if you're all in it together, you're all being held accountable. You're all having to do, you know, as a teamwork. So I think you're definitely onto something. I appreciate that for sure. Does anybody else have any words of wisdom they'd like to share in the sustainability long-term change route?
I think piggybacking off of everything that Rolanda said, when we're teaching classes, allowing for participants to answer each other's questions, because that builds their confidence. And I always share over and over again, you all already know this, like Alicia and Rolanda both said as well, their participants have said, I know this. And then helping them build that bridge of, I have this knowledge, I've heard it so many times, so many different ways, and this is how I can apply it. And I know that this is very similar to what I shared before, and I've definitely seen that it helps them to, especially as they start to get towards graduation of, you know, I'm going to hit bumps in the road once this class is over, but I can go back to the materials that I have. I can call somebody from the class. We can stay in touch. Just that they already start to build that plan of course, I'm going to fall off the wagon, so to speak, at some point, because I'm not going to get this perfect from here on out, but I don't have to keep making those same choices that would send me maybe having a higher blood sugar again or having the weight gain come back on, but, you know, kind of hitting the brakes right then.
I was just going to add consistency. If you go to Casey's class, if you go to Rolanda's class, whether or not they have 100% participation, they have 20% participation, their engagement does not change. And their participants know that. They know that they're getting their absolute best at all times. And I think that really does change the dynamic of your education and your facilitation if you can remain that consistent. The other piece is transparency. Look, I'm over here in the struggle bus. We in the struggle bus together. But we're going to get off of it together as well. Because to me, that speaks to the journey piece of it. It's not like I've arrived to healthiness. There's always something you can do. The person who's eating five fruits and vegetables and then some and exercising every day may need to focus on stress management. So I think that the classes we provide here, or at least try to push that holistic approach and really aiming towards balance in the end.
And I want to touch a little bit too. You've mentioned BMI and now you've mentioned stress management. We've had some weight A1Cs. Those are all very medical, you know, terms. And so oftentimes, you know, we are in public health working not necessarily directly with anyone's healthcare provider or practitioner. And I know you've mentioned like the childhood obesity programming that you have. And, you know, of course, that's the messaging through the hospital system. And we're hoping that everyone, to your points, have been speaking the same language, being consistent. Do you have any, you know, commentary or, you know, insights into how we can better align like the public health efforts with the medical side of things? You know, because oftentimes, as you know, the struggle bus, you know, people just want a quick little fix, right? They just want something that's not going to be, you know, spending a lot of time and energy and effort. But, you know, how do we work to align that public health message with, you know, the inundating, you know, wellness or medical ads that I feel like, you know, society is bombarded with?
Well, I know at the Free Clinic, when we first started partnering with them, it started as an employee wellness initiative. So sometimes in order to get to patients, you really have to focus on providers. And that's probably more often than just sometimes. It's probably all the time, because unless they have adopted a healthy lifestyle themselves, or at least get the purpose, you know, it's hard for them to translate something they're not living. So, and I've seen the evolution of their programming going from really staff focused to putting it in their waiting rooms so that way patients could participate if they wanted to now they literally have a program that supports lifestyle medicine for all of their patients. If you're a patient going through their doors, you're going to receive a referral to their program. So I think it's time, and then making sure that you're promoting wellness to the people who are making decisions and that it's a priority to them as well, not just something that they want for their patients.
Walking the walk and talking the talk, huh? I think that's always a big piece of that responsibility is not just sending out the information, but also being a walking depiction of that as well.
For a lot of people with limited resources, their first worry might be just putting food on the table and then making sure that there are a certain amount of fruit and vegetable servings or whole grain servings or healthy proteins, et cetera, that may come as a second or third priority. Pair that with, you know, there's a belief out there that healthy food just is more expensive. So all those things considered, what is your approach to having that type of conversation with people?
Casey, please talk about the grocery store tours. I think that's a great foundation of addressing Kara's question, and then I'll jump in.
All right, grocery store tours. My humble beginnings. But the grocery store tour was really exciting for me because it had always been a personal dream of mine to do those since learning about them in school. But to see or to really break down that you don't have to buy all fresh fruits and vegetables to get your fruit and vegetable servings and, you know, encouraging, like, if your budget only allows for you to buy canned fruits and vegetables, to make that choice of canned in its own juice, low salt or no salt added being the best, of course, that frozen is a great option, that brown rice and beans combo is a complete protein. Really breaking it down that just make it work for you, that not, you know, I know that it can be daunting to see fruits and vegetables more matters. And then to, if your brain automatically goes to, oh, this has to be all fresh. And then looking at your budget that week and saying, this is impossible. I'm not going to be able to make this happen. I know that when I was giving the tours, there was a lot of relief from people saying, oh, I didn't know that buying frozen produce, I was still going to get good nutrition versus, it's just that there was so much of a belief in the individual's minds of fruits and vegetables means 100% fresh and that's all that counts. And then allowing for the times on the tours for people to share how they shop. How are you saving money? Are you buying in bulk? Are you going to a certain type of grocery store? Are there certain days that are better for certain things?
Yes. So definitely that educational piece. And then reminding them, you know, that we are human too. And we don't always make the best, you know, decisions. I'm not always going to choose an apple if I'm with my grandma and she has a freshly baked apple pie, you know, that's making the house smell good coming out the oven. That's just not going to happen. But, you know, I have a plan for that. I have a plan to burn off those additional calories. But like Casey shared, you know, there are a lot of myths where food is concerned. And we've had participants that honestly believe if it's not fresh, then I should not consume it, you know, but maybe can is all you can afford and it's okay. So let's talk about what we're going to do with those canned fruits and that canned vegetable, you know, the canned vegetables. And then as well as frozen, you know, I've heard so many things about frozen food and it's not good for you. Okay. Well, let's talk about how those frozen peas are going to be better than those bag of Frito-Lays, right? So let's talk about the benefits. And, you know, just having those honest conversations and, again, the small steps turned into skips that turn into leaps. And then before you know it, they're running. They're running and they are surprising you with, you know, some of the meal plans that they're creating. And I have to take a moment just to talk about reading nutrition labels. A lot of people are very, very overwhelmed with reading nutrition labels. Start step by step. Start at the top. Let's talk about serving size. You know, I remember when we would share the size of the portion plates, and they're like, you expect me to have my breakfast, lunch, and dinner off of that plate? I remember one participant tossed it like it was a Frisbee, you know, and I tossed it right back in love. I said, no, we're going to talk about this and use this today. So let's talk about a cup. And then, you know, there's an overwhelming feeling if they don't necessarily have measuring cups or measuring spoons. So how can we use our thumb? You know, how can we use our fist? How can we use these day-to-day items that we see on a regular basis to help us with measuring the right portions, rather? It's fun. It's just engaging them, breaking it down in a way that's easy. Because even as a public health professional, I may have to read things over and over and over again until it really sinks in. And so I definitely believe that we take that into consideration when we are working with our groups, you know. So we don't want anybody to feel intimidated with the information. It's up to us to find a way to make it fun. You know, I'll take a nutrition label and turn it into a quiz or bingo. You know, where do you find this? Somebody give me an example of a carb. What's the difference between, you know, complex and simple, so on and so forth. And so it's teaching them in a way in which they are going to retain and then be excited about sharing what they've learned with somebody else. We have a participant. I never would have guessed that his participation in the program, he attributes his wife's recovery from her stroke to his participation and journey to a healthier me. And I would have never, ever, ever, ever thought that in a million years. And so when the doctor was talking about the type of diet that she needed to have, the importance of physical activity and, you know, drinking water and things that we talked about in the program, managing stress, he's like, I know how to do that. And he now serves as her life coach.
I wish the listeners could see us clapping and see us like and cheering on, because when you hear things like that, you can't help but be inspired. And so I was so glad that Rolanda mentioned those labels. As adults, one of the things we love doing is making our own decisions. People do not like to be told what to do. But when they finally realize how to read the labels, they realize they've been making decisions unknowingly. You know, you kind of knew that the chips were not as healthy as the carrot, right? But you didn't really know. And so by giving them these tools, they can really begin making decisions for themselves. And I find that people often choose the healthier choice once they know. It's like, oh, wait, I gotta work out for 30 minutes to work this off? Oh no, I'm just gonna eat this apple right here. I might put a little peanut butter on it because I need that in my life.
Yes.
But I'm gonna make some adjustments because I can't do all of that.
That is exactly it. And of course, you know, we're not trying to like shame or guilt anything either. But once you kind of know this information, like knowledge is truly that power. And I think, you know, all of you have mentioned something that's just not only that accountability measure, but then also just how that application, you know, the confidence in the kitchen. So going from the grocery store to the house to, you know, implementing it within your family, like those are all different, you know, self-esteem measures that really just have to be like checked off, if you would. Knowing that you have that knowledge, you have that power, you have that ability to be in control. And I think, you know, we all need to have a little bit of that inside of ourselves to really make those differences, because it's something that makes, you know, quality of life and longevity something that's been worth living for and, you know, something to aspire to. And I think, you know, we're talking about eating more fruits and vegetables. And so you take your to-go box home, but then how do you repurpose it? How do you make it taste good? You know, canned vegetables, you know, they're a staple at our house as well. And there's something that to be said for throwing it into a soup or a casserole dish. But it's just about having that confidence and that skill that you just kind of learn over time. You figure out what your neighbor's doing, how they're making it or how they make it at church. And it's like a recipe swap, if you would. And next thing you know, you're like your own nutrition guru in your own house. And I think that is where, you know, that trickle down effect makes like long lasting sustainable changes too, because you have positive memories and positive experiences about nutrition and food in general. And I think that goes a very long way.
And one thing that I know we've tried to do with our cooking classes, and Greg Stewart is one of our, I would say he's our advocate of health and wellness. I personally call him the Serenity Sensei because he brings me peace and blessings. But trying to adapt our classes so that we're not doing cooking classes in the ideal situation. So we've been purposely doing recipes that you can substitute things for. Well, hey, your recipe says this, but we're using this because we had this in our refrigerator. We already had an abundance of this based on another class, because by us doing this in our instruction, we teach other people that it doesn't necessarily mean you can make this recipe even if you don't have every little thing. Like, maybe you don't like walnuts, because that's what we get in our classes. Well, I don't like walnuts. Well, guess what? Do you like pecans? Do you like almonds? Okay, so substitute it. And so they start to have this, their own autonomy and being able to switch up recipes, and they give us feedback, which I love. They'll say, you know what, I wasn't feeling this, but I put this instead because based on what you taught us, and I like it a lot better. And so we try to incorporate their own recipes in classes. So that's helped us. So when you were mentioning like the canned goods or frozen goods, we try to incorporate those as well as fresh fruits and vegetables in our classes. So people know you can use all three. It just takes a different approach to preparation.
And no salt, right? Just kidding.
See, okay, since then, we have incorporated salt, but we make sure we limit it, right?
Okay, thank you.
We limit it. One teaspoon. Less than one teaspoon. And we incorporate tons and tons of like herbs and spices, because it's so important. And like, for instance, one of the things that I did in one of my cooking classes with kids, I will purposely not make it the way I would make it for myself, just so they can taste the food without me jazzing it up, right? So we made this cauliflower pizza, actually Megan's recipe for cauliflower pizza. And so I added the Parmesan in the crust so I wouldn't have to add salt. I added some garlic to that crust. And because we were using canned tomato sauce, we used one with reduced salt. That's how we made it. It had no meat. They did, you know, tons of veggies that they were able to add to their pizza. So when the parents and the students left, they're like, you know what, I would just add a little bit of salt. And I'm like, oh, that's good to know, because guess what, I added none. And I think that experience of tasting food as it is helpful for people, because we add salt before we even taste things, and we have to get out of that habit. So Megan, you have given back to us in finding a better balance of utilizing herbs and spices, and you know, just a little bit of salt, just a pinch, just like on the cooking shows. They always use a pinch.
Bam. See, but that has retained over years. So that, if anything, I'm proud.
I love the practicality that encompasses all of the different examples that you guys mentioned, because I think that's, to me, one of the things that ultimately is what actually creates for someone that's going to last, is being able to fit it into their real life. And no one's going to go from, well, it's not likely that someone's going to go from 0 to 60. And if they think that they have to go from 0 to 60 and they don't, like Casey, you were miming the steps that someone takes, right? Like, you have to start with step one. You know, you don't start with, the full amount of fruits and vegetables that you need if you've never tried to change your diet before. So I just appreciate the conversation of practicality. How do you feel the challenges and successes you all experience working in community health in Cabarrus County? How do you feel like those experiences may represent similar challenges and successes in other counties all over the country?
That is a great question. And just thinking about the North Carolina Minority Diabetes Prevention Project that the three of us work with, we're broken up into 10 different regions, and all 10 regions have their strengths and they have their opportunities for improvement. And I'll never forget, I think it was the hurricane that we had, was it earlier this year or the end of last year? And Casey and I, when we were participating on the calls, just hearing, you know, how those communities and those counties went weeks without power. And, you know, here we are in Cabarrus County, more inland, we're absolutely fine. Our participants, we don't necessarily have to pursue vouchers for farmers markets, even though we promote and encourage farmers markets, but there are more rural areas where that's really all they are going to get their fruits and vegetables from. And so we do have to be mindful of, you know, the access to fruits and vegetables, safe places where participants can be physically active. And where physical activity is concerned, you know, you don't necessarily have to go to a gym You can exercise in your house. You like music? Let's dance. You know, the use of a pedometer or a fitness tracker, building small teams in regards to, you know, who can get the most steps in. You know, that's regardless of where you are, whether you're rural, whether you're more city. And so I think when we take a look at Cabarrus County, there are so many factors that have to be considered, but one of the things that we've been able to do well with are our partnerships and even participating on our conference calls. The more rural neighborhoods thinking about how they can build better partnerships with their Ys or with their local churches or with their schools where gardens are concerned, so on and so forth. So I do think the positive successes that we have, they can be duplicated, but in some areas it is going to take just a little more time than expected.
Who can add on to Rolanda? Okay, she is everything. I'm such a Rolanda and Casey fan. So I think one thing that we do share is just sustainability. Whenever you work in the world of grants, no matter how you try to sustain things over time, you build, you know, capacity of your partners, there's nothing like having the funding of that particular grant in order for it to run the way it did. So I think we are in the same boat as other places that are, you know, relying upon grant funding and the instability of that. But I think with our new leadership, our new structure, we really are hoping to realign ourselves to be more effective in being able to sustain successful programs. And in the past, I think that has always been our goal, but we haven't been able to structure ourselves financially to be able to do so. But given this pandemic and all things going on, you really have to strip everything, figure out what is your structure, so you can begin building upon itself. So what a very interesting time to be in. But this is the time to be able to make those adjustments, because sustainability is not just something you have to consider. To me, it is the core consideration for all programming. If you can't make it last, you know, then why are we doing this? Ultimately, why are we doing this? And that's what communities want to know. They want to know that if this works, are you committed to staying in this with us? And in order for us to continue being good community advocates, we have to be willing to make that commitment. So I'm excited to see how our community transitions to that. And obviously, it's the steps that Casey was showing us earlier, one step at a time. But that's most important to me. I want to be able to sustain the work that we are putting in place. So when I am old and still exercising and eating my fruits and vegetables, I can say, oh, well, in my retirement, they're still over there helping food access. I'm so proud.
Right. That was good, Alicia. I'm glad Alicia brought in the sustainability piece. Going back to grant-related work, you have to start working on sustainability day one. If it's a 3-year grant, please do not wait until year 3 or the last 6 months trying to figure out, well, how are we going to keep all of this goodness going? No, you need to start building your sustainability plan in year number 1 and working with your partners, your target population, so that they can become, you know, the advocates, as well as they have the power to keep the program going. So if there's a train-the-trainer model, you know, if they want to become lay health educators, you know, the garden piece, once you get the garden started and you determine who's responsible for what, that's a part of an initiative that can maintain itself. But definitely have conversations about sustainability early on in any project.
What is one thing that you wish you could share with people in the community that you serve? Something that maybe represents all of the behind the scenes work that goes into community health programs that may not be directly evident to people of the community.
Well, I would say that we have very specific protocols to follow. We have line by line deliverables we need to meet, reports that we need to make, everything from, you know, when we're giving out incentives, that there needs to be logs that are kept for that checks and balances to show who received what item, organizing these items within the health department, navigating, doing the recruitment with talking with people one-on-one, talking with groups, doing program overviews on Zoom. There's all kinds of different hats that you wear that you would never see if you only saw it from the perspective of being a part of a class and seeing the class being given. But like Alicia mentioned, all the talking that we do, talking with brainstorming about, what do you think if I were to do this? Or this participant had this question. This is how I'm thinking about addressing it, but how would you address it? Have you seen success in this area? There's a lot of planning and planning for planning that goes on, piggybacking off of what Rolanda said about thinking about sustainability from day one, that as you're teaching, your brain is also thinking about, oh, well, I saw that there was confusion when I spoke about this area of nutrition or physical activity. I need to do some research and I need to find a different way to say it. So I think it's just that there's all kinds of different places where your mind is going. And also something that we always remind ourselves is why we're doing it. When it can definitely become stressful when you're being pulled in different directions, but that what we're really here for, the purpose of all of this organization and planning and documentation and reporting is to deliver an excellent program that people can connect with, that it's relatable and sustainable.
I would say, or rather I would add, that was really, really good, Casey. I think you hit just about everything. I do want to dig a little deeper in the data collection piece. You know, when we're asking for food logs and fitness logs and we're asking participants to complete surveys, we're doing it because we love them. It helps with sustainability to prove just how successful our efforts are. And something else that we want them to know is that when we're writing the grant, we're not writing it. We're hoping that it's going to be a perfect fit for the community, but there's a lot of room for adjustments and tweaks if necessary. And so if we realize that one specific part of a program is not working, we need to hear their voice. We need them to share, you know, let us honestly be aware of, you know, how we can make that improvement. If it's something that's really not making the change that they would have hoped and desired, please let us know, because we need to take that into consideration. You know, we want this to be the best experience ever. So we definitely need their participation when it comes to data collection. And it's not because we don't like them. I know writing down what you're eating, food diaries, it's not what you would say is very, I'm not going to say meaningful, but something that you would, you know, say, you know, I absolutely love this. We have people that tell us that they hate it, but they also realize when I write down what I eat, it helps me become more mindful of what I'm consuming. But at the same token, we're taking in those food logs and other data collection tools to help us get a better view of, you know, our program. And if it's doing what we set out for it to do.
I think the best part about working in the community with all of you is the passion too, right? You're only human. You clearly have a passion for public health, wellness, nutrition, whatever you insert after that. And I think that's something that the community starts to see once they start working together with you. It's that, you know, you have only as much to give. You can only pour from your own full cup, right? So public health that you're teaching others, we also have to, as professionals, follow. And I know that's something that I always, you know, was a struggle for me working in public health, was that, you know, I couldn't help everybody or everything, but there's always so many opportunities to connect people or to, you know, share a resource or, you know, give back as much as you humanly can possibly do. But of course, we're just trying to set everybody up for their own success and their own sustainable measures and their own, you know, journey that they're going to be taking, whether or not you're there with a grant program or not. So I genuinely appreciate all that you have shared today, because it has been, you know, it's a passion, and it's so exciting to see the programs and the opportunities that are available in a community just like Cabarrus, and that could be implemented, you know, nationwide. It's something that we all can learn from school gardens to food pharmacies to, I think there are so many opportunities. You just have to find what really works for your space. So I really appreciate all the time you have given us today.
No, I would just like to plug SNAP and WIC because they are extraordinary federal funded programs that provide a great resource to our community for those who don't have access or have limited access to fresh fruits and vegetables and healthy food. So once again, just wanting to shout out programs that have been really successful in being sustained, because it's a combination of programs that are being federally funded, locally supported, and then just our local, you know, citizens and residents and nonprofits that are putting things up on their own independently. So it takes all of us. So I just had to plug them. You can't talk about food and nutrition and not shout out your SNAP benefits and your WIC benefits, because those programs are so great. And so if you are eligible, definitely sign up and use
good
it.
Good plug.
You just made Rolanda and Casey so happy with our WIC passions over there.
We serve youth ages 0 to 5.
Do you need an infomercial?
Thank you, Alicia, Rolanda, and Casey, for a great conversation on the importance of realistic, practical, and sustainable nutrition and health education in communities all over the country, just like Cabarrus County. Continue listening to this series for monthly conversations with key thought leaders in holistic health and nutrition education, with discussions about nutrition education, race and health, and the natural approach to health. This series is a part of the Holistic Matters podcast series, which you can access for free on holisticmatters.com and on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes are released monthly on Mondays, first thing in the morning.